Hit it.
Welcome to the Test Talks Podcast, the place to go to geek out on software testing. And now your host, whose mission is to help you succeed with test automation, Joe Colantonio.
Hey, it's Joe, and welcome to another episode of Test Talks. I just want to remind you that Perf Guild, the first online conference dedicated 100% to performance testing, is now open for registration. So if you're doing anything to do with performance testing or you want to expand your automation skills, go to perfguild.com and check that out. Talking about conferences, after attending a test conference, do you sometimes wish a presentation or workshop could have been better? If you're like Greg Pascal, the answer is yes. So in this episode, we're going to be test talking with Greg Pascal as he shares his thoughts on his latest experience at Star East, as well as some key takeaways and related thoughts he found himself pondering about automation after his experience. As always, Greg always brings a ton of value, a ton of information. You don't want to miss this episode. Check it out. Test Talks is sponsored by the fantastic folks at Sauce Labs, the cloud-based automated testing platform that eliminates the need to maintain your own Selenium grid and test infrastructure. Try it for free today. Visit testtalks.com and click on the Sign Up Now link under the homepage sponsor section. Hey, Greg, welcome back to Test Talks.
Hey, Joe, it's good to be back and let's get some time to talk with the audience.
Awesome. Yeah, this is your fifth time on Test Talk, so I highly recommend everyone check out your episodes 8, 19, 112, and 133. But in this episode, it sounds like you went to Star East and you got a lot of interesting takeaways from that. So I thought we'd explore your experience at Star East Conference this year. Before we get into it, what have you been up to since last time we spoke, since episode 133?
Well, I think last time we spoke, I had just started working for a guy named Dave Ramsey here in Nashville, Tennessee. It's been about a year and a half now. I've been working for him, and it's been pretty cool getting to know the team, learning a new programming language. I'm learning Ruby, and jumping into Selenium for as a newbie. It's a year and a half now in the making, and I think I'm finally starting to get it, Joe, just a little bit, but maybe enough to be dangerous.
Cool. So I guess my first question is, I noticed for people that don't know, Greg was a speaker at Automation Guild, and we have a Slack channel that people get access to once they join the guild. And Greg's an active contributor to that particular channel. And one of the topics that came up was his experience with Star East, and especially with his, I guess he took a class, they have one-day classes on Selenium. So I guess, Greg, I'd like to stop your observations on, you know, what was that class like, that first day on Selenium? And what do you think, how it could have been better, or how do you think it could have prepared people for that experience better?
Well, the class itself is really kind of a soup to nuts introduction to Selenium. And I love a class like that. Even if it's something I've done for a long time, it never hurts to kind of go back to the roots and learn. You know, you're going to learn something that you might have missed along the way. So that was my initial thought, is go through this class and kind of level set that the methodology I'm putting in place here at Ramsey is on target. And the good news is it is. We're really on target. I'd say we're progressing well, and I think we've got a good sustainable strategy. But there was some things I hadn't planned on coming up while I was in this class. And I got to preface it that the folks that led this class did an exceptional job under the circumstances. So I'd like to give you a little bit of backstory. This class, it was really targeted towards folks that wanted to learn, wanted to get some introduction to Selenium. They had a couple options. They could either learn it from a Java perspective or Ruby. They could learn to use Ruby Mines as their development environment, or another environment that's Eclipse, which is very common. So this was an all-day class. It was held on Tuesday. And actually, I found out one of the guys that was leading the class, he and I actually spoke a year ago. And so that was kind of cool. We got to finally meet face-to-face. What happened in the class, I don't think anybody saw coming. And that was, is they started to go over a history of Selenium and, you know, just some initial introductory things. And I think the main teacher at one point said, so everybody got the email. And what we found out was, is that even though these folks had pre-registered, they didn't get a really critical email that was supposed to be sent out a couple weeks before. And that email was going to help them set up their basic environment so they were ready to jump into the class. And boy, I felt for these guys that were leading the class, because you can imagine having about 80 people in a room with all sorts of corporate laptops and that sort of thing. You know, all the different security settings that ours are all locked down with. Yeah. You can imagine a Windows and Mac, them all of a sudden confronted with nobody really had an environment to start with that was supposed to be in place. So, you know, we did our best to try to help folks get set up. Really, it took most of at least half a day to get maybe even a third or half the class somewhere where they had Selenium installed, they had either Java or Ruby installed, and they had the IDE installed. And during the course of that time, I got to meet a number of people. Now, I'm still probably consider myself somewhat of a newbie to this whole new tool set, but I had enough that I thought I could help some folks. And this is really where I started to make an observation that I wouldn't have really been aware of if I hadn't been to this class. And that is, a lot of folks that had been sent to this one-day seminar had been sent there from their management to, you know, basically to learn Selenium and to come back and start to build out test automation. And we had folks there that had never opened a command line before, and those sort of things. So they were very new users. And I started to think, how does this happen where management has set them up to go kind of, you know, fulfill this miracle of learning this in one class and with this expectation that they're going to come back and write automation. You kind of see the problem, Joe?
Yeah. I'm just curious to know if you spoke to any of the people that were having those issues, and what were their expectations? I know managers should have a certain expectation, but I would also think the person taking the class, I'd be curious to know if they thought it would be easier than what it really was, or that if they were aware of their lack of knowledge that they would need to actually get started with automation.
I think most folks had no idea what they were about to walk into.
Wow.
And that was a surprise. So, like I said, we had some folks that figured out how to open up a command line. I remember one person opening up a command line and saying, "Is that Selenium?"
Oh my gosh!
And,
so
you can kind of get a sense of just the basics that it's really no fault of their own. They may not have been equipped properly. A lot of folks had old hardware and things like that. You know how that can be. Sometimes QA can kind of get the secondhand stuff. The devs get the better.
Yep.
But that wasn't the case for everybody. But there was a very common pattern in that room of folks that really, I think, had a sense that this was going to be much easier than it turned out to be.
Wow. Yeah. No, I really feel for it. Having put on my very first conference, you know, I got comments later that some people said it wasn't advanced enough, but I was thinking more like what you experienced, that most people actually wouldn't have experience for automation. So I kind of aimed it towards the beginner intermediate. So what is this? I agree with you. I see this a lot, that everyone all around for some reason doesn't expect that automation is a real development effort. And not only is it an effort, but once you have these scripts, you need to maintain them, which takes time. And it's very frustrating. So I guess you coined a term, Selenium syndrome. Could you just tell us a little bit more what you mean by the Selenium syndrome?
Sure. Well, I mean, that kind of just rolled off my tongue as I was really writing that out in the on the Slack channel. And the reason I coined it that way is you hear Selenium thrown out very often at a conference like this. It's a very common term that people will throw out, meaning that they're expecting to do automation, or they're expecting you to do automation, or it's an easy thing to do. And I think that even if you go to the Selenium website, which I just was at the other day rereading some of the API stuff, it sets kind of a similar unrealistic expectation in that it refers to Selenium as an automation tool. And we really know it's a lot less than that. I often compare it to if I came to you and said, Joe, hey, let's go for a ride in my Goodyear. You would say your Goodyear. Well, selenium is kind of like the tire of a vehicle. It's a small piece of a much bigger set of tools that really are required to do test automation.
You know, I never noticed that. I just went to Selenium HQ and I noticed that they say it's just for browsers, but they call it Selenium is a suite of tools to automate web browsers across many platforms. And although that may be true, the ability to glue together all these different tools to get a solution is very difficult for someone that has no experience with development.
Exactly. As I started to write out there on the Slack channel, the Automation Guild channel, by the way, I love this channel. And for those of you folks that haven't got in on that, you need to check it out. The Automation Guild is awesome. And this is an incredible resource to have access to. As I started to document some things out there, I thought, let's begin to think about something we can do to change this. And I realized that a lot of us are at fault for this very problem. And that is that we get in that mindset that we really love a particular tool. And we're willing to kind of take it to the grave, whether it's the right tool for somebody else or not. And I think that's when we cross the line, when we're not actually doing a service to that person. We're not really doing a service to our engineering field of automation. When we're beginning to kind of just get followers by blindly telling them to use a tool. And really that was my challenge on the Slack channel was, we really need to be able to step back from what we personally believe is the right thing for us and take some time to consider and even help the person assess where are they at and what's the right tool for them. Even though we love open source or we love whatever tool set, I mean, I've used HP forever and I love that tool as well. It's really a good idea to take some time and consider, who's about to embark upon the journey of writing automation for their company.
Once again, I definitely agree. So it sounds like you're recommending that people be exposed to more than just one tool, just because a lot of times if you learn one particular tool, you think that's all there is to automation. Where if you look at other tools, you start learning, okay, what are the differences? What are the differences, but also what are the commonalities? And maybe those are the things I should focus on.
I absolutely agree. I think if the listener is someone who considers themselves an expert in this space and they have folks coming to them, they really owe it to those people who are coming and asking for their advice to have got some exposure on some other tools, even if they just download a demo for 30 days and, put a couple hours in it. It's really the right thing to do. At least they can see the difference between these tools and really help that person make the right decision. I did that at the conference. A good friend of mine, his whole team is on RunnerX, and I really hadn't had any exposure to it. So I got some time to spend with the RunnerX folks. And that was really helpful to kind of see how their tool worked. And I think that's a smart idea.
Absolutely. I love Selenium. I love the open source approach. But, having a background with these vendor-based tools originally, I think really gave me a solid foundation on what can and cannot be done or how much effort it takes to do something. And I was actually experienced this at the Selenium conference this year. Someone was upset that HP was there. They're like, why is HPE here? Well, they've been in the automation game through Mercury for, 20 years? I think they have something to bring to the table. So how do we get people to be a little more open-minded? I really think there's benefit to vendor tools. I'm not a pushing vendor tools on anyone, but it depends on your team. Some teams may actually benefit from it, where others that are more developers wouldn't. So what's your take on broadening people's perspective? How do you do that?
That's a great, great question, Joe. I think you've got to, and maybe even some of this is on the person asking, that you're looking for folks that are open-minded in this. Let's face it, some of your listeners are still considering what's their first step to take in automation. Mm-hmm. And I think I probably would advise those folks to make sure whoever you're asking that they're maybe sharing a couple perspectives on different tools, and you don't hear a real strong, you're going to hate this tool, you're going to love this tool. Let's face it, I was in a meetup last night here locally in Nashville with some great guys. And, at one point I said, as someone who's come from the HP tools and now has been Selenium for for a year and a half, guys, honestly, I can do just exactly the same thing with HP. It equally can do the same things. In some cases, it can do it better. There's some tools there that are missing in the Selenium landscape. So, but that came because I had that experience. And I think that's an objective position. I mean, I'm both feet in on Selenium now and Ruby, and we're making some progress. But the fact is it takes an enormous amount of extra effort in the Selenium space than it does with an off-the-shelf tool. It's just as simple as that.
Here, in the real world, I've actually experienced this. You know, I selected an open source tool using Java for automation and Selenium, thinking, you know, that developers would be contributing to the effort, which they're not. So we're supposed to be doing Agile, and we're supposed to be, everyone in Sprint is supposed to be doing automation, but it's always one guy. And it's the toughest job, one, to get the team to contribute, not just that one guy. And if that one guy's sick, you're in trouble. Or to even hire people with skills, let alone skills with automation, but skills with automation and development and Selenium. And it's just so frustrating that, you know, we could have just selected a vendor tool. I'm not saying it's better, but for our situation, it would have been better.
Yeah, I mean, thankfully, we've got guys like Dave Hefner out there that have decent training tools on Selenium. He's one of my favorites. We use him as a standard by which as a compass, if you will, of how we're going to move forward in our effort. I think we might have talked about that in a previous podcast. I think if you're going to choose open source, find something like that. Google is not the acceptable way to learn to write Selenium test automation. You're going to be all over the map. I'm always amazed at the different ways that people pull things off, especially around things like object identification and synchronization. We know, regardless of what tool you go with, those are two key things that you've just got to nail. And so, depending on the tool, there's a way that it's been designed to handle those things. And so use it as designed.
Absolutely. I guess when you're able to program, though, using the API, you're able to, I guess, the pros and cons of it. You can create it any way you want. So there are no real standards. There are standards, but you could do anything. Where Right. When you have a vendor tool, it's kind of like they've already gone through, here's the method, use this methodology, and this is how you do it. And so that's the standard. If there was something like that with Selenium, that would be great also to start with.
I agree. You know, it's funny how many people discard a tool. You hear it all the time. Well, that tool stinks, or this tool sucks, or whatever it is. And then you find out that person has had actually zero training on the tool.
Yep.
They've actually figured it out completely on their own. Again, thinking about that user who's listening right now, who hasn't made up their mind, if I heard someone, that might be one of the questions I would ask them is, tell me about the training you've had. And if they haven't had any kind of training on that tool, honestly, I'm not sure how much I would tell you to take that person's advice. It would be better to find someone, even if it's going to take you another month to find them, that can give you a referral, who's actually had some training on the tool, even if it's an open source tool, so that you know you're following kind of a reasonable approach.
Awesome. So I'm currently listening to an audiobook on asking why questions and why they're important. I believe you actually posted in the group three or four questions that you would ask to make sure your automation efforts are going in the right direction. So can we just explore each of those questions you think are important to get someone in the right direction? Awesome.
Certainly, Joe. There's three of them that I wrote down. Actually, I tweeted out a couple of these. Believe it or not, I woke up Wednesday morning, real early in the morning, and started thinking of some analogies. And these are summaries of those analogies. They're really for, let's say someone came to me and they said, Greg, I want to stand up a new automation effort. These might be some questions I would ask them that are going to help guide me in leading them towards at least some tool that might be realistic. So the first one is, are you and your company more inclined to build all your own custom tools or buy something off the shelf? So the idea here is, again, with Selenium, you're going to have to cherry pick all the moving parts. If we go back to the Selenium site, it seems to imply that everything's there. Joe, you and I both know everything is not there. You're going to need to choose all sorts of moving parts. The reporting's not there. The test management's not there. There's a lot of pieces that are missing. What you're going to have is the API. You've got to choose the language and a number of other things to get it working. But the second one is your management more inclined for a quick turnaround, or are they more experimental? Like they like that exploratory, evolving sort of results kind of mindset. If your company likes to you know, explore and they like to build on something small and evolve it over time, then granted, maybe a tool like Selenium would be a good fit. But if they are in a hurry to build something, that's probably not the right tool for you. You're going to find it's going to take you some time to stand this thing up and get it going down the street and build a methodology that's sustainable over the long run. Now, the third one I had, are you someone who could stand up your own Linux box? Are you the type of person that relies upon IT to help you with computer issues? This would be very fitting for the class I just came from. Most of these folks had never even used a command line. Can you imagine those folks kicking off their scripts or trying to work with Jenkins or something like that? If this is you, if you're more of that kind of person who relies on IT to help you to get out of trouble with your computer, then again, Selenium is probably not the right choice for you. You're probably better with an off-the-shelf tool that you've got support, you've got some manuals to look at, and you've probably got some examples to look at. So I could keep coming up with these analogies, but I mean them sincerely. I think asking questions like that as someone who is being asked to guide somebody, the results or the responses that we get will help us to have a better understanding of where that person is and guide them correctly.
Awesome. And Greg, I'm not sure if you've seen this. I actually created a video recently on what is the best automation test tool. And one of the suggestions I give on deciding what the best test tool is, and I'm not sure, it's not rocket science, but I'm not sure why most people don't do this, is do a proof of concept. Most people do an agile. Why not do it for a 2-week sprint, make it part of your sprint, get everyone involved, and that's going to tell you right away how successful you're probably going to be with the tool. Just wondering if that's an approach you would recommend or what your thoughts would be on that.
Joe, I love this idea. It ties into a chapter in my book, actually. It parallels this concept, which is to do an automation evaluation before you engage in any project. So you're just taking that kind of one bump up, which is to do a tool evaluation. 2 weeks seems pretty reasonable. At the end of 2 weeks, it seems like you should be able to at least get the train to go down the track a little bit, you know, with whatever the basic test case is. You should have a sense of how long would it take you to build out some automated test. You might have even had to maintain something you built if you ran it every day. I really love that idea. I think it's very smart.
All right, Greg. So you have your questions. Is there anything else that came up out of your visit to Star East, your adventures of Star East? A lot of times when I go to Star East, for some reason, a lot of the speakers have been there over and over and over again. Was there anything new that you saw that you think you'd like to share with us?
Well, there were a lot of speakers I have seen before. I do have something I'd like to comment on in that. And I actually published a paper through TechWell on how to attend a conference well. Ironically, I almost think I should need to write the complimenting paper, which is how to present at a conference well. You know, when you do something over and over again, it's easy to get comfortable, maybe even lax over time. And I think when you consider the audience of folks that have come to a conference like STAR, they've spent many thousands and thousands of dollars to get there, to pay their, you know, to get into the conference. And yeah, granted, we're going to have some awesome speakers. So as a presenter, think about that and be very professional in your approach. Consider that this may be the only conference they ever get to. And if their boss was there and they saw the quality of your presentation and your delivery, would they feel good about that? They just spent, you know, $2,000-$4,000 on sending this person. Was it of the quality we would want? I feel kind of like someone who wants to continue to shepherd our field of automation to see it improve and gain more respect and evolve to that next place that it needs to as a respectable engineering field. So that's going to involve those of us that get to speak and present, that we do it well and we do it professionally. And realize that folks, this may be the first time they've ever seen anybody speak on any testing topic or QA. We don't, you know, need to get into a battle of the wits over one tool or another. I think it's easy for people to get into all kinds of controversial topics. But I think it's also really good to talk about the staple things that that entail great testing and great quality assurance engineering efforts.
Awesome. I definitely agree, Greg. And I know a lot of people always ask me for resources, what they can learn more about test automation. I definitely want to plug your book, Test Automation in the Real World, Practical Lessons for Automated Testing. I think if someone's getting into testing or if they've been in testing even, I would grab this book. It's $9.99 on Kindle. And I think we need to take responsibility for ourselves first. And once we know we're enlightened, we need to spread that to our management. And that's the only way it's going to happen. So this is one way you can do it. So thank you for this resource.
Certainly, Joe. Yeah, if people want to check that out, they can go to realworldtestautomation.com, and that'll take them to a link to get the ebook and now even a printed copy of it. Yeah, I ran into quite a few folks that had read my book since it's been out, and it was really cool to see that it had helped folks. It's really a lessons learned over a long period of time to give them some foundational things. I pointed a lot of people to the chapter on how to hire an automation engineer. I think this is a really critical thing. As you are thinking about hiring a guy, let's face it, all the buzzwords can be there and you can wind up with someone who's not a great fit for what you need to do. So that chapter alone may be worth it to help make sure you get the right guy who's going to help you steer you in a direction for sustainable automation.
Awesome. So Greg, that's actually something I know a lot of people struggle with. It sounds like a lot of people are giving you that feedback also. That was a big help. Are there any other topics that they tell you about? Or can you give us at a high level what someone should look for when they're trying to hire someone for automation?
Yeah, I think, you know, again, you're likely to find all kinds of buzzwords out there. You're going to find, you know, the word Selenium and test automation and maybe BDD, Cucumber, all these sort of things that we hear all the time. I would really look for someone who can point back to an automation effort that they built that was running 2 years after they built it. I'd love to hear maybe their strategy for maintaining the automation over the long haul. How are they training folks to do that? You know, how did they learn it to begin with would be a great question. These are some basic things that can really help you to make sure you're heading in the right direction with folks. I see a lot of folks on LinkedIn, you know, that have all those buzzwords out there. And it does have me concerned. Where are they coming from? Because I have a feeling they would build, probably a lot of these folks would build automation really different from one another.
Once again, I definitely agree. You know, sometimes I team up with people on interviews and someone will be grilling someone like on Java and like these really obscure things in Java and the people are answering it. But then when I ask them, all right, so give me some automation best practices or good practices you recommend. Nothing. They can give nothing. I would not hire that person. So it's kind of scary how, you know, it's such a complex job, I think, automation. You have so many skills you need in that. Someone may technically know a programming language, but that's not enough to be successful with automation.
So yeah, we were just writing about this today. A little bit that you really want that QA mindset. I know some folks would differ on this, but I think I would prefer to have someone that has a QA mindset and then they develop their chops in development, because I know then they're going to approach their automation from a testing perspective. I think when you flip it the other way around, there's this temptation to write automation that always succeeds. I mean, I found even yesterday I was working on some code. I think I was blogging about this a little bit, and I got sidetracked for a moment, and all of a sudden my eyes got on the fact that I wanted this to pass, and I kind of snapped out of it. I've been doing this a long time. Everybody gets caught in this, and I realized, nope, wait a second. Is what I'm trying to set up actually, is this indicating there's a defect here? And lo and behold, we actually uncovered two defects. But it was so simple for me to have coded this just a little bit different and that test would have passed. So I think we all, as automation, even our seasoned guys, we can get trapped up and caught up in that. And so it's a good thing to be aware of.
No, I'm so glad you brought that up. I actually was reading that and thought, well, I need to bring this up, Greg, because it's such a great point. I mean, I definitely agree. Sometimes it's just like you just want the automation scripts to pass and you're just writing code to get them to pass without even saying, okay, wait a minute. Well, why is it failing every Tuesday or every other day? Or you know, what's going on here besides, rather than just saying it's a flaky test? Well, you may want to look because it may not be an actual bug that's in your application that you're hiding. So I think that's a great point.
We actually had that. We had a refactor, and we had a required field that no longer was required. Well, the test was testing that the required field would produce an error message. Well, when we hit submit button, guess what? The form submitted. And that's what threw me off, is the next step in the test was to validate that it was on the correct landing page, and it was failing there. And the locator had been updated. So I thought, well, what should the new locator be? And then it dawned on me, I'm like, this isn't a new locator. This was trying to validate that was on the page it was on before. And that's when I kind of had, aha, wait a second. We've got an actual bug here. It just so happened to coincide with, a refactoring of the application we were testing.
Yeah. And once again, I think it's such a perverted view that a lot of people fall into, is the job is not automation. Your job is not to create automated tests. Your job is to test your application. One of those ways you test it is using a tool like an automation tool. But I mean, the whole point is you want to find bugs, and it's your job is not just to create automation scripts. The reason why you're creating automation scripts is to test an application. So I think this also would help people not write so many tests, because they get lulled into thinking, I have 1,000 automation tests, therefore I have quality software. That's not true. You may have 1,000 really bad automated tests that aren't testing things that really are critical to your business. So once again, I definitely agree with you there.
I agree. I'm always my ears are always tuned for when I hear folks that tell me they've got, 5,000 tests automated, or how many tests automated. I think it's easy to get focused on the wrong things. And let's face it, some folks are actually incentivized to generate as many automated tests as they can. Yep. And that's just the wrong target altogether. We talked about that in my class. Now, my perspective is we write automation for repeatability. We want consistent results over and over again. And I think we've talked about this in a previous podcast, that I have this concept I call the sick kid syndrome, which is when you run automation the same on the same order day in and day out on the same code, you begin to detect its personality. How does it interact with the application? And you start to notice things that it starts to run different. It begins to run a little different. We've detected firewall problems, load balancer issues, all sorts of things this way that are kind of in that gray area. But lo and behold, they were real defects that we encountered.
Awesome. Okay, Greg. I know you've already given us a bunch of actionable advice already, but is there one other piece of actionable advice you can give us to improve our test automation efforts? And what's the best way to find or contact you?
Sure. Well, I would say there's these two things I want to leave these automation engineers with. Always consider you should have a great synchronization strategy. And I actually think there's four synchronization strategies. There's four synchronizations that every tester should have down pat, which is, does something exist? Does something not exist? Wait for something to exist, and wait for something to not exist. Those four synchronization methods should be in your toolbox. However you need to create them or whatever, they should be solid. And it's one that I'm pursuing yet again in our tool set to try to make it a little more intuitive in our tool. So that's certainly one. The other one is around object identification. And when it comes to locators, I tend to try to standardize on 2 to 3 properties at most. I can usually almost dial in a great locator with 2 properties. That's all I need. And I tell folks, avoid anything that has to do with the look and feel of the application, like a class name or whatever. It's very popular for people to use CSS class names in their locators. I would say that should be the last thing you should try to use. Try to find an ID or something else that's more solid. And if you have to, go ahead and use the class name. But ironically, I really don't have to do that now that I'm using this other approach. I find that there's other ways of doing it well. As far as contacting me, Joe, I'm super easy to find online. Again, I have my website, realworldtestautomation.com, and I'm easy to find on LinkedIn at Greg Pascal, that's GregPascal.com. Or you can find me at Greg Pascal on LinkedIn. Thank you so much.
As always, thank you, Greg, for your automation awesomeness. For links to everything of value we covered in this episode, head on over to testtalks.com and in the search, type in 158. And while you're there, make sure to click on the free trial button under the exclusive sponsor section to learn all about Sauce Labs' awesome products and services. And as I mentioned, make sure to check out Perf Guild, an online conference dedicated to performance testing, Head on over to perfguild.com to learn more. So that's it for this episode of Test Talks. I'm Joe, and my mission is to help you succeed with creating automation awesomeness. As always, test everything and keep the good. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to the Test Talks podcast. Head on over to www.testtalks.com for full show notes, amazing blog articles, and other automation awesomeness.